Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Literacy View. We have a very special guest with us tonight. We have Leah Mermelstein. Oh, I messed that up, Leah. I'm so sorry.
Oh, it's Mermelstein.
And Leah Mermelstein has her own consulting business called LMC, and she collaborates with school districts, educational professionals, and learning organizations to enhance K-6 literacy instruction and promote literacy development. Leah Mermelstein is a literacy thought leader, published author, and passionate writing, reading, and language development authority. And I want to mention that Leah's background, and this is what's really interesting and so cool about Leah, is that she actually co-authored a book with Lucy Calkins. And the book is called Launching the Writing Workshop. And that was published by Heinemann. She also, for many years, she specialized in K-5 reading and writing workshop. And she has since then moved into learning and making it really her primary concern to know about evidence-based instruction. Leah has gotten to know us very well. She has listened to the show, and she wanted to be on the show. And we welcome people who have this background. Judy herself was...
Were you going to call me Lucy?
I almost did. I know. We have to drink up. But anyhow, Judy, I wanted to just say Judy was a reading recovery teacher, and she also has embraced new learning along the way. And we welcome that. We love seeing people who are thought leaders wanting to bring the best of everything into their practice. And for those of you who do watch, but maybe missed the last episode, we had Bruce Howlett on. And Bruce, his mission is to really try to end the reading wars and to try to bring the best of the experts together and bring the best teaching practices to children. And Judy and I are passionate about that as well. And this podcast is really about doing that and bringing people from all walks of life on and having a fair say in this. So we welcome Leah. It's really a pleasure to have you. And our article tonight is a Tim Shanahan article, mm-hmm. and it is called How Should We Combine Reading and Writing? And this article originally was written in 2017, but then it was reposted on September 16th, 2023. Leah has written a book, her most recent book, called We Do Writing. And Judy and I both have the book. She was kind enough to send it to us. And I want to tie in the article to Leah's book, because this article is really about the importance of teaching together, reading and writing together, teaming it up together and not separating it. As Tim Shanahan said, which I love, in his article, I thought it was hilarious. He said, we don't want to separate this. And in his words, he said, these folks sound like the type of people that would separate Romeo and Juliet, yin and yang, Lennon and McCartney, love and marriage, Bert and Ernie, spaghetti and meatballs. You get the idea. So Leah, Judy and I have your book. And I think the problem that we're seeing across the board is that people think if you teach reading and writing together, it's balanced literacy. And so we are moving in this direction to go so far in the other way to make sure that everything is evidence-based, which is great, but we're losing the idea of the whole language. And so how do we marry this together to stay true to the science of reading, mm-hmm. yet know that classroom teaching encompasses reading and writing. I hope that was a mouthful, but I hope you get the idea.
Yeah, I do. I think, I was thinking about this article as I was working in schools this week. And it was interesting because the school I was working in this week on Monday and Tuesday, they were having me come in for reading. And without even thinking about it, the very first words that came out of my mouth, and listen, when I go into schools, we don't talk about whether we're balanced literacy or science of reading. We're just trying to make an impact. And so when I went in there, I said to them, I know I'm here for reading, but there's no way that this conversation isn't going to bleed into writing and isn't going to bleed into content area. I don't know how else to talk about it. And so when we started to talk about, I'll give the kindergarten example. We started to talk about their vocabulary in reading, and they were talking about the word nuisance. And the second we started to talk about nuisance, and they were talking about that from the book, that led to oral language, where they were describing different scenarios of when was a child a nuisance? Was she a nuisance here? Was she not a nuisance here? And then it moved into writing, where the kids were doing personal narratives, and some of the kids were writing stories where they were writing a story with a beginning, middle, and end that revealed somebody who was a nuisance by their actions. And so it just naturally went into all of those. And so I don't know how else to talk about reading without talking about writing, and writing without talking about reading. And I don't know how to talk about it without talking about content as well. So when a school hires me for one part, it never is just that one part. Mm-hmm. I can't do it.
Yeah. Okay. So, Judy, I think, you and I spoke to Bruce Howlett last episode, and we have these conversations all the time. And there's a lot of confusion out there about, what we should take from balanced literacy and what should be left behind. So, you read this article. Mm-hmm. By Tim Shanahan. What are your thoughts about the article?
I had a lot of thoughts. So my thoughts were kind of divided into two parts. So the first part was just, I was so taken by the question that teacher asked about how one teacher was teaching writing and the other teacher was teaching reading. And I was so taken by, and I think it's because I'm somebody who goes into work with teachers, and there's so many obstacles that get in the way of actually being able to connect reading and writing because two different people are teaching it. And so just the first thought that came in my head as somebody who's working in schools is, how do we make it easy for teachers to teach seamlessly between reading and writing and content area instruction? And, that was a clear example of one teacher is teaching writing and the other teacher is teaching reading. And he said something in there like, well, I guess they could always get together and plan, but that's just not efficient. That you're going to have your, teacher who was like me when I taught, who stayed till 8 o'clock at night, who said, sure, I'll meet. But most people are too busy. And so if it's not easy, they're not going to do it. So that was my, before I even jumped into the content, which I can talk about next, I just was thinking a lot about how do we make it seamless so that teachers are easily able to teach and plan across reading, writing, and content area.
So I'm glad you brought that up. Judy, of course, is working in the city schools, and I would love to hear what she has to say after reading this article and hearing some of your thoughts, Leah.
All right. So right when I read Tim Shanahan's article, I thought salt and pepper go together on your kitchen table. Macaroni and cheese goes together. And when he said Ernie and Bert, he really got me, because I'm a child that grew up in the 80s and my life was Sesame Street. So thank you to him for that. But you know, it's the truth, Faith. Even behind closed doors, we're always talking about the forgotten pillar, writing. My journey started a long time ago with thinking about the writing revolution, but then it wasn't enough for me. I wanted to go deeper, right? So now I'm talking with Leslie Lord, and I'm looking at the SSRD, We're here with Leah talking about writing today because it's an area I'm extremely passionate about. And I think it brings something to mind. Faith, you'll probably know the saying. I don't know what the saying is. I wrote down some notes. It's almost like reading is breathing in and writing is breathing out.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And
I so, really, yes. What's the saying? Do you know the exact wording for it?
It's inhale, exhale. So
it really, really is. For me, it's really connected. And I think it's such a key piece in, you know, the application piece, right? I think kids have to see things in multiple parts of their day. You have to see it in phonics. You have to be able to write it on a paper. You have to be able to read it. The brain wants to see things in multiple places in order to be successful and transfer that learning. Mm-hmm. So for me, they all go hand in hand. What else? The big thing that, you know, I think Tim hit on the money this time is mentioning, you know, with the pandemic, everybody thinks it's, you know, an emergency right now. And yeah, we see a lot of kids are struggling right now in reading, but they're also struggling in writing and they really go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. And what's the other saying? You can't take from Paul to help Peter. Yeah. What's that other one?
Yeah, Peter to pay Paul. Yeah.
Obviously, after work, you know, my brain is a little fried, but it really is the truth. And I think that his message is so important. And I'm really happy that he decided to make this article make a big comeback because people are trying to make strategic decisions. We know there was some learning loss for a lot of little kids, especially I'm seeing that with kids that I work with privately in third grade. You know, they didn't have a lot of handwriting instruction. They were home for kindergarten. Yeah. So we can't say, oh, you know, the pandemic is over, move on. Yes, eventually life will go back to normal and we can't use it as an eternal excuse. Mm-hmm. But we also have to think about how are we spending our time. Yes, we want kids to read on level, not levels, but you know what I mean, on level.
On grade level, yes.
Right, but we can't, that doesn't mean we should neglect encoding, which is really, really important. Right now, a lot of people are talking about decoding. I've been talking about it now for about 30 to 40 episodes, but it's also time to, you know, talk about that encoding piece as well.
Mm-hmm. So, so let's go to content. Yep. All right, let's talk about content. So here's what where I'm hearing the confusion is. It's, and I'm getting this from a lot of different places where writing sometimes now is perceived as, you know, writing a proper sentence with, you know, grammatically correct sentence, which of course is extremely important.
Yep.
But the whole process of writing, I think, is getting lost somewhere.
Yep.
I'm just finding that the deeper we go into this, there are people who have very set ideas. Mm-hmm. And I think, Leah, you mentioned that when you listened to our last episode with Bruce, you love that it was nuanced.
Mm-hmm.
How do you start discussing how we can address content in a nuanced way? The content of writing in a nuanced way so that we don't just focus on a sentence, which of course is important, and which should come first, the chicken or the egg? Are we letting kids write with the process and then fine-tuning the sentence, or are we starting with the proper sentence and doing it the other way around? Because I have some thoughts on this. I'd love to hear your thoughts, but go ahead, Leah. Let's see what you have to say.
So I think it's when I'm working in schools, it's a little bit of both. Like, I think you're working on sentences, but I also think many of my schools still have a writing workshop going on in their classroom. But I think maybe what I'll do is describe how I imagine a unit with teachers, because I think that might help to imagine the idea of thinking about sentences and then moving into whole pieces. So when I'm planning a unit with teachers, one of the things that we think about starting with is, let's say they're doing a persuasive essay, or they're doing a personal narrative, or we start by doing what I would call a write aloud. Mm-hmm. And we will literally look at the piece and say, what are the 8 power sentences in this kind of writing? And what do they sound like? And then in a write aloud, what we'll do is we might take on one or two of those sentences a day. So we write across a whole week. And when we're doing a write aloud, it's different than the way I used to imagine shared writing, where you might say, who has a great beginning for this persuasive essay? And your top kid raises their hand. Mm-hmm. It's different than language experience with a child might say anything. You say, wow, that's fabulous. Let's write that down. You are literally, you know, if I'm trying to get a child to or my class to create a sentence that begins with although, I tell them that. Mm-hmm. And we might start with a kernel sentence. Mm-hmm. And then we're building that sentence together. So we're constructing the whole sentence together, bit by bit, mm-hmm. with my learning targets in my mind. So I already have the learning targets. I already know the 8 power sentences that we want to compose. Listen, when the kids come and start talking about it, it might not go exactly how I planned, but I still have that, what's the kind of sentence I want them to make. And once we construct that sentence together, they turn to the person next to them and practice it. So that every single kind of sentence they're going to write mm-hmm. over this unit, every child's mouth makes that sentence. And when Dr. Gillis came on to your show, I was
Margie Gillis.
Yes. I was so taken by, you know, and I thought, this is common ground.
Yes, this is common ground. Language.
Language. And so that this is before any child puts a pencil on paper, we are sharing the work with our mouths. I'm also showing them a clear cut example of this. You know, I can remember in the 90s doing a workshop on mentor texts. And I was, you know, probably way too young to be doing this workshop. And the principal raised their hand and said to me, you really think a first grade kid can write like this? And I remember thinking, oh, but it's a really nice text. And I would still say we show those kids those amazing texts, but they also need texts that are like the ones that they're going to write, the kinds of sentences that they're going to do. So often when I work with teachers, we create one together. We'll say, what are the 8 power sentences? Let's create a paragraph of this, or let's create the whole thing. So that first week is just oral practice and oral composition. And then it's each of those sentences. And then we're looking at that. And it's interesting because I call this the immersion. And that's sometimes been kind of defined as, oh, it's just discovery. And when I think of immersion in the way I do it, it's very explicit. And so that might be happening for the first week or so. And then we move into maybe the middle of the study is guiding them through it. So now they're making something, but we're really kind of taking on a piece at a time. Mm-hmm. We'll go back over that sentence, and then they're doing it. And then at the end of the unit, it's more applying. Well, now we're not going to be, you know, because that's what we want. We're not teaching them these grammatically correct sentences because we want them to be able to write a grammatically correct sentence. We want them to be able to put it together and be able to do it on their own. So we typically would plan a study, kind of keeping the oral language in the beginning, and then thinking about kind of the model, modeling and sharing the work, guiding them and applying it at the end.
And that's always how I thought writing is taught.
Yeah.
Starting with oral language,
yep.
Because I don't know how you could do it differently, mm-hmm. but to me, it's always been about the oral piece, yep. and kind of then bringing this together with explicitly teaching how a sentence looks, but starting with the big picture about getting your ideas down on paper, mm-hmm. I would call that a brain dump. We always start with,
yep.
you know, this brain dump and then organizing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was happy to see that Leslie Laud's work with, you know, self-regulated mm-hmm. writing mm-hmm. instruction is all about that.
Yep.
So, you know, and when I looked at your book, there's a lot of, and that, you know, you talked about, we do this guided instruction, practicing a lot with kids.
Mm-hmm.
I always say practice, 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 yep. not jumping right to this independent. And I see Judy nodding. So I know she's kind of gnawing at the bit.
Well, yeah, I know that.
Okay. I know she's writing all these notes.
Yeah. Oh, it was already written before. We think the same thoughts. I said, independent writing relies on the gradual release. And when I'm going into classrooms for years, all of a sudden, the model is barely there. You see an anchor chart. They show the kids an anchor chart, not mm-hmm. at the place that I'm at now. They show an anchor chart, talk about something, start asking questions right away. Okay, go right. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a process. And the width, I think Leah hit it on the money in terms of the width portion. It's very, very important having that practice. And you also mentioned that interactive writing piece. And you know what? The interactive writing piece was a big part of balanced literacy. I think that was a piece that they did get right. I still have my reading recovery tape from 2013, the cover-up tape where we used to, you know, if we made an error, we talked about the error. We covered the error. But I think we also got a lot of things wrong. And I know this might get a little controversial. Huh? Okay. I think for a long time with the balanced literacy model, there was a lot of joy. But for a lot of kids, there probably wasn't a lot of joy. A lot of kids didn't know how to write. So, you know, kids were writing independently at their desk for a very long time sometimes. Mm-hmm. Writing was poor. They were yep. just putting down nonsense. They weren't getting a lot of feedback sometimes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I really, really, truly, even when I was in balanced literacy, I always tried to do things in small little steps. Mm-hmm. This is how we write a beginning. This is how we write a conclusion. Really small steps, because I didn't want to produce pieces that, you know, really didn't follow a process. And I think the other piece that was missing for me back in the balanced literacy days was, and the Writing Revolution actually, even though we don't usually talk about programs, started my brain thinking more about writing. The planning piece, I don't think was fully developed very well back in the day. I think that training helped me realize how important planning is and what planning may look like. Because like for a long time in schools back in 2000, 2005, 2006, kids did a lot of webs mm-hmm. and there was lines sticking out all over the place. And then a lot of the kids had no idea what to do with that information and how to put it into something that looked like it was going on a page of text. So now you gave potentially a child that doesn't really like to write. You told them to write here. Then you told them to write there. Then you yep. told them to write a draft. And then there was publishing day. Yes, it was exciting for some kids, but for some kids, it probably was hell. Mm-hmm. I hate writing. And now you're telling me I have to copy that.
Mm-hmm. No, I love what Judy is saying. So right. Leah, how has your journey evolved? Mm-hmm. Going from, and I could relate to what Judy's saying. Mm-hmm. A lot of what she's saying, I experienced too. Mm-hmm. That kids were left alone a little bit too yep. long to figure things out. Mm-hmm. And this workshop model might have worked for some, but it was definitely not working mm-hmm. for a lot mm-hmm. of kids. Mm-hmm. So how did your instruction change from your days of doing this workshop model? And what are you doing differently now in the schools? How have you evolved?
That's a great question. So I think, you know, I can still remember myself saying over and over again when I was first doing this work, your writing workshop is only as good as the other components that surrounded it. But I didn't talk about the other components. I would just say that. So I instinctively knew that the other components had to be strong, but I didn't see that as my role. I kind of was coming in and I was doing writing workshop. And now when I think about the teaching of writing, I think about it in a much bigger way. So when I'm talking about writing instruction now, I'm starting with the what's your phonics instruction? We're talking a little bit about what are some elements of high quality phonics instruction. So even if the phonics program that you have isn't the best, we can still look at it and say, it should have decoding of words. It should have segmenting. It should have blending. It should have phoneme manipulation. So we talk about that. The other thing I've done is really helped teachers. And I think this is one of the, when I talk to teachers, they say this is one of the biggest impacts is we put in 10 minutes of interactive writing, but different than how I learned about it in the 90s. Where the way I learned about interactive writing in the 90s was kids come up with a message and then the teaching is kind of incidental. I can remember in my first grade classroom, I was doing a post office in my class and we were doing like teachers got more mail or students got more mail. And so I'd be sitting here in the beginning of first grade talking about how E makes the EA sound because we were writing the word teachers. And so, although I still see some value in, you know, sometimes you're writing something and you end up having a conversation about something that's not in your scope and sequence, the interactive writing I'm talking about now with teachers directly is linked to your phonics instruction. So you are writing together sentences where kids are getting practice with what they're learning in phonics. So that I've taken on that role now of helping teachers make that, because it kind of reminds me of, it's a weird story to make a connection to, but when I was learning to parallel park, I didn't know how to, and I was trying to park in Hoboken. And Hoboken is known for small spaces, yelling people. So I was trying to park with all kinds of other chaos. So I hated it. And I feel like that's what's happening to kids when they rush into independent writing. They're trying to write with all this other chaos. And so the interactive writing, I'm controlling the environment. I'm controlling the environment so that you're practicing what you're working on. So really thinking about we've added that part to it. I have slowed a lot down on the really thinking about that beginning of the unit. The other thing that I've tried to help teachers do is come up with learning targets. Like in this unit, you can't teach kids everything. And what are the three or four things that you want kids to get better at? And then what I ended up having to do a lot, because I'm constantly bending curriculum, because I get hired, people don't usually hire me and then say, what programs or what curriculum do you think we should have? They hire me and they say, help us work with this curriculum. So what I find myself doing a lot is looking through curriculum and saying, if these are your four learning targets, which concepts are you going to linger longer on? So like when Judy gave that example of, that's what happened a lot. You know, you teach a lesson on leads, off you go. Here's four different kinds of leads. Off you go. Best of luck to you. And then tomorrow will be commas. Mm-hmm. And so what we really did is we said, if these are our four learning targets, then we're going to work on leads for many days in a row, and we're going to study them and we're going to talk about them so that kids are getting more practice. If we're talking about leads, what could be happening during reading time to be thinking about that? So I think really coming up with those learning targets, the interactive writing, the write aloud, and I also think the creation of our own mentor texts. Of we still used mentor texts that were out in the world, but we also, when I unit plan, we create mentor texts, and then teachers have those links inside their curriculum year after year, and have those mentor texts alongside their learning targets.
So when I'm hearing you say, you know, based on the examples you have given, is that you definitely have evolved with your phonics knowledge. Mm-hmm. And integrating that knowledge into writing instruction, mm-hmm. along with being a lot more focused in how you would guide children with a lot more practice.
Yep. Absolutely.
Is that what I'm hearing?
Absolutely.
Okay. So interestingly enough, in this article, Tim Shanahan mentions Steve Graham.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve Graham is the co-author with Karen Harris, mm-hmm. and they've done a lot of research on writing, mm-hmm. and I have their book as well, and we are going to have Karen Harris on.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yes, it's really amazing, and Karen Harris is going to talk about the latest research. There's some that's hot off the press, so I'm not going to give that away, but you know, we are very excited about having Karen Harris on. And in the article, Tim Shanahan mentioned that Steve Graham and Michael Hebert carried out a meta-analysis of more than 100 studies in which students wrote about text. Mm-hmm. They found that writing in various ways about what one had read improved comprehension and learning,
mm-hmm.
and it did so better than reading alone,
uh-huh.
reading and rereading, mm-hmm. or reading and discussing.
Mm-hmm.
So this reading and writing partnership mm-hmm. has a ton of research mm-hmm. behind it. So, and basically that's what I'm hearing in terms of, science of reading, mm-hmm. bringing in the science of writing. I'm hearing that too. But what I have been hearing, Leah, is that the process, again, I'm going back to what I said before, that this writing process now is thought of as like balanced literacy. And we really shouldn't be doing that because a lot of the writing didn't work before mm-hmm. and we should get rid of it. And now kids should just be writing about social studies mm-hmm. and science, content area writing, mm-hmm. and responding to that type of text. Mm-hmm. Is there value, I guess this is my roundabout way mm-hmm. of asking you, is there value in other types of writing? Because I feel like now we're going, the pendulum is swinging yeah. and we're going in this, direction of kind of ignoring the process yeah. of writing. What are your thoughts about that?
I think absolutely. I think all those kinds of writing, I think are hugely important. And I talk about them all the time in schools. I also think that there is a place, even Dr. Gillis's work around oral language.
Storytelling,
yes,
yeah.
Kids mm-hmm. should be, kids should be writing stories. They absolutely should be writing stories. I think that I see places where kids should, I think when I first started teaching writing, I was 100% kids should always choose what they write about. And as I learned more and more, I began to think more and more about the reasons behind it and kind of dug into it. The reasons behind it is that we want kids, it's not really about kids choosing their topics, although I think there's a place for that. It's about writing about what you know well and what you're passionate about. When you write about what you know well and what you're passionate about, it's bound to be higher quality. And I do think, and I think it's different kids. I think some kids are going to be perfectly happy just writing about what they're learning in school and responses. Other kids are going to want to sometimes choose their own topics, and they'll do really well choosing their own topics. I've heard the word anybody getting into that flow where you are so passionate. It's kind of like when you write a book and mm-hmm. you've chosen the topic and you're so passionate, you look up and it's 14 hours later. And you can't stop thinking about it. That's not every kid, but it is some kids. And so I do like to have some times in writing when kids do have a choice. It's interesting. I have my daughter on the back of my shoulder whispering to me, because when she was in first grade, she said to me as we were walking down the street, she said, Mom, I know you like all this writing stuff where kids choose their own topics. I hate when my teacher asks me to choose my own topic. And it was interesting. I thought she was just giving me a hard time. but as it turns out, she does not like choosing her own topic. So I say that with even when kids can have choice, first of all, it's responsible choice. And second of all, I always recommend that teachers have a way where if kids are not sure and they don't want to choose, that there are options inside of that unit that connect to content. So that at different units, sometimes there's no choice. Sometimes there's umbrella choice. And sometimes there's choice with responsibility.
So Judy, I want to hear your thoughts about this, because I have some of my own thoughts. I know that lots of kids sit with a blank page mm-hmm. given too much choice.
Yep.
While other kids certainly can handle the mm-hmm. choice and they can write about anything.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that a lot of kids in classrooms need a lot more guidance.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm curious to know, what is your feeling about what teachers are thinking now in schools about writing instruction? I would imagine they're very confused, because I'm confused sometimes hearing the different perspectives. I mean, I know just from my own experience, and I've been trained in lots of different programs and methods, some very strict about structure. I have been trained from, you know, Judy Hochman herself, you know, like not just Writing Revolution, but I've had training directly from Judy Hochman in, you know, sentence writing and just basic skills. And then I've had other types of writing instruction that is more process oriented. So Judy, how do you feel in terms of listening to teachers? Do you find there's confusion? What do you feel?
Very, very interesting topic. So I think that right now, in New York City, they're rolling out evidence-based curriculums, one of them being HMH, another one with Wisdom, another one is Expeditionary Learning. And the one that I see most commonly in the field right now is HMH. And it seems like it's very heavy on the reading. The teachers aren't jumping for joy in terms of the writing. They're really, I think a lot of teachers are struggling. I don't know if it was written quickly. I don't know, you know, if things are going to change and get better. They probably will. I know I see a lot of people on social media giving feedback to publishers. So I'm sure they're probably at their desks right now making updates. But, you know, the truth of it is, I think that teachers are really struggling with A, learning the science and how that's shifted. I mean, my journey is, you know, I've been in education since 1997, started teaching in 2000, reading recovery trained in 2013, did that till 2017. And now for the last 7 years, I've been on a journey into the science and structured literacy. Not everybody is at that same place. And I think it's going to require some patience and understanding to know that everybody's at a different place in their journey. But those kids are only in first grade, second grade, one time. They're not going to be getting those foundational skills 50 times. So I think it's really important at this time to think about, what am I doing? Why am I doing it? The intentionality of it. Mm-hmm. I think that different things serve a purpose. So like even in some phonics programs, you'll see some dictation. I think that has a purpose. Absolutely. It's helping kids with, okay, I wrote a glued sound maybe in phonics. Now I'm going to write it in a sentence. Yep. So those silly sentences that are kind of boring and put you to sleep, they have a purpose.
They have
and a purpose. When kids do them well, that's a great sign that they may be able to now read a sentence that looks like that and write a sentence that looks like that by themselves. But I also, you know, hearing Leah speak, I had a flashback of something I haven't thought about in a long time. When I was a classroom teacher back in 2008, 2009, 2010, we had writing journals. And the kid, and that was sometimes a free time to just decorate your writing journal and put on some great stickers. And I had this book, it was called, I think, Amelia's Notebook, and there were different versions.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
Where this little girl was like a brat, and maybe now they have a boy version, they should, and whatever other version, because, you know, the world is looking a little different right now, or more accepting and loving. But, you know, there was joy. Kids were writing, and that was a safe time. So maybe I have forgotten a little bit that there are times where it's okay not to get feedback and to be able to just get your thoughts out on paper. And maybe that's a whole cathartic moment for that kid where they're able to express something that they don't want to express orally. So maybe that does have a purpose. I think what's happened in my structured life is I'm so concerned with feedback because I'm so worried that kids are going to habituate bad patterns. But at the same token, I think, and I'm going to say the word, I think there does have to be some type of balance that we're not sucking out all of the joy. I mean, there was some joy in my classroom during balanced literacy. We had, you know, celebrations. If we were writing about animals and then all of a sudden all the kids brought in this stuffed animal shark and they made posters with things. And I haven't seen writing look that way in a long time. I think that time was missing a lot of that explicit modeling and the thinking aloud and all of the with portion, but there was some joy in those celebrations. Those kids felt proud standing at their table, showing what they just created. I don't see that anymore. And quite frankly, you know, now it's structured time, but I don't see a lot of structure going on in those classrooms either. I see just really frustrated. Why is my reading lesson not connected to the writing lesson? Why is it not the same topic? Now it's 10 times harder. Wouldn't it be nice and seamless if a lot of these companies would think how to seam it together so it's not starting all over again, teaching about a completely different topic? And now, you know, maybe it would be easier. You know what? We just read personal narratives. Now let's write a personal narrative and connect it.
So I'm going to stop you a second. Yeah. So you said so many things.
Notes in different columns.
Yes, you said so much. But I used to also have my kids have journals too. When I taught first grade, they all had the journals. And I also used Amelia's notebook. And so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right.
But so here's the thing, a couple of things. So Leah, what I'm hearing Judy say is a lot of these schools are adopting core programs, but that does not mean the core program doesn't have holes. And so no matter how well designed a program is, and our beautiful friend, Maureen Ruby, Dr.
Yes, I was
that's who I was just thinking of. I watched that episode. Curriculum tools.
And so I'm bringing it back to all these episodes. Yes. Anybody out there, look for Dr. Maureen Ruby. Oh,
that was a beautiful one.
Look, I think about her every day in the classroom. Yes.
I love Maureen Ruby, but anyhow, and she's a personal friend of mine from my reading first day.
Right.
Anyhow, brilliant woman.
Yeah.
Anyhow, you know, I would recommend people go back to listen to Maureen Ruby. Listen to our latest episode with Bruce Howlett. Listen to Margie Gillis. Anytime you have a core program, you have to expect that you're going to have to tie together things, and you can't allow the program to run the classroom. You have to know enough. So could you comment on that? Because I'm actually going to throw in something else. We're having Stephen Chulo on, who is also a researcher, and he said that one of the reasons that writing is poorly taught is because teachers don't feel confident in their own knowledge about writing. So, and they did a research study that, and Judy and I are going to talk about this too, how many, many teachers, when asked, do not feel confident about their own abilities in writing. And therefore, it's very hard for them to teach writing. And maybe that's why it is a little bit neglected. So I kind of asked you a two-part question, Leah.
Yes.
One is about the core program.
Yep.
And the other is about teachers' feelings about writing and their own writing.
Yep. Okay. So I'll start with the core program one first, because I was, as I was listening to Judy, I was sitting there thinking to myself, it's such a hard position to be in. And one of the reasons why I'm, and it's like, it's almost like we are doing similar jobs, but in different lives. My role is to help school districts bend curriculum. So it's like one of my districts was doing Wit and Wisdom, for example. And one of the things we look at is what's missing. Independent reading, you know, that, yes, we don't want kids reading independently for 75 hours or you know, writing Dogman comics for 7 days. But to have some time in your week when kids can read or write independently, is really important. And so I think this idea of, and it's kind of like, it goes back to, why are we in this position? Like, why does this keep happening over and over again? And I think there isn't enough, what's everyone's job in this change? What's the superintendent's job in this change? You know, it's not great. We have a new curriculum. Everything is all set. We have to look at it and say, where are the holes? What are we going to do to fill in those holes? I loved when, was it Ruby who said curriculum tools?
Dr. Maureen Ruby talked about this.
Yes. So the curriculum, like when I go to a school, one of the things that we're always doing is that we are creating a curriculum. So if you looked on, you would see whatever holes we saw, we fill them in. I mean, how many schools I've worked in who are doing writing workshop and we've bent the curriculum, and what you see online for that district is really different than the curriculum tool that they purchase. So I do think, and that just, you know, speaks to, if I think if we want real change, then the first step is just getting a new curriculum. It's like, what are all the other steps and what's everyone's role in making sure that this is successful?
Mm-hmm. And so what do you think about teacher attitudes about writing? That was my other part of the question.
So, yeah. So that I think is, I actually, you know, I think about it, people probably spend more time reading than they do writing. And this is kind of reminding me of my early days and things I don't do a lot of anymore, which a lot of people really liked and said helped them, but it almost feels strange in the age we're in, where we would actually have as part of our training, if their fifth grade kids were going to write persuasive essays, then if I was meeting with teachers for 4 or 5 days in a row, the last hour of that was I was doing the same lessons I would do with the kids, and they had to publish a persuasive essay. They had to write in the way that their kids wrote. And, you know, it's not something I ever do anymore, but people used to come up to me afterwards all the time and say, I didn't feel comfortable writing, and now I feel more comfortable. So I do think it's interesting. It's kind of reminding me of your last session with Bruce about how do we make sure that we're not just that there are things that we've done in the past that have helped, and there's things that we didn't do. I think Judy is always so eloquent about speaking about that, that I wonder if teachers' attitudes would change if they had some time to actually try out the writing that they're asking kids to do.
Interesting. Judy.
I definitely don't see a lot of the writing process anymore. I see a lot of writing to respond or writing a quick little, like, I think recently I saw kids had to decide what was the author's purpose. Was it to inform, persuade, entertain? And then they write one sentence about that and it's done. Yeah.
Could I tell you, the people I speak to they tell me that there's really no writing going on. And so
you're hurting my soul.
I'm telling you the truth. And a lot of the people I'm talking to now, Judy, are parents of children in high performing districts. And these parents are telling me that they hardly see any writing instruction, coming home with anything that resembles that they've gotten any type of writing instruction. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, woefully inadequate what they're seeing. You know, and I just wonder if that has to do with this idea of teachers being confused, not really knowing what they should or shouldn't do, mm-hmm. or something a little deeper, what Stephen Chulo and his researchers are exploring is really this teacher attitude about their own ability to write
that,
well.
That could be part of it, but I think a big part of it, my gut feeling tells me there's holes in curriculum also. Yep. And what Leah said also, the rush for time and a literacy block. There's not enough time and people are basically squeezing writing in.
I was thinking to myself, thousands of years ago, I wrote a book called Find the Clarity and Then Blur the Lines. And it was a book on reading writing connections. And I really thought hard about the title because I think at the time people were doing a lot of, oh yes, we're doing theme, we're integrating everything. And then what I was finding is they were integrating everything. But kids were doing writing, but the teachers weren't teaching writing. I wonder if that's what's happening too. So kids are writing a response, but there isn't actually any teaching of how to write that response. And I know Tim had talked about that in his article, but I think that they just assign it, or they tell kids to do it for homework, but
100%.
They're not actually teaching them how to do it.
Read something and now write about it.
100%. I can tell you that I know from Tim's article, he mentioned summarizing. I just posted about summarizing. And that was one of my posts recently, how I teach kids how to set up that topic sentence. Think about it in parts. List your facts. Then think about what you're not going to include. And then, you know, bring it together and, you know, how to fine tune it. I don't want to get into that, but the point is, it's not just write a summary. It's showing kids how to write the summary and practicing how to write summary.
And seeing what a summary looks like in writing as well.
And that's
program. I'm still just getting into it. Goes back to something that we used to do a long time ago where we did show kids mentor texts or a piece that is completed so kids see a sample of what something may look like.
And I think, I think mentor texts, and like that's how come I've been so just focused on helping teachers, even if we're doing an integrated unit, even if I'm working with fourth grade teachers now and they're doing nonfiction and they're doing main idea supporting detail responses. We are coming up with our learning targets for the nonfiction reading, and then we're coming up for our learning targets for the nonfiction writing. We're thinking, what is it that you want kids to be able to do so that they know what they're actually going to teach?
So I think, you know, you talked about common ground before. I think what I'm seeing is the common ground is that we need to teach explicitly. And we need to be able to still pull from what we knew about the process, but bring in more explicit pieces with modeling, with a mentor text, with really doing a lot more guided practice instead of leaving kids on their own to figure.
But that doesn't mean you have to stop celebrating, and that doesn't mean and showcase your writing like we used to, because those were great things, right? But this is my worry, Faith. So what if I don't know all the curriculums, right? I'm not some I'm just a person trying to get through the day like everybody else. What if these programs didn't exactly get it right on the ball with writing? How much research was put into all these new curriculums in terms of the writing portion? And if they did get it wrong, is it salvageable? And, you know, my fear is, like I said, again, that we're just going to be a pendulum that swings back and forth through time because something wasn't right again.
That's a really good point.
In terms of reading, but it might not be shifting as well towards the writing. And the reading and writing do go hand in hand. But if the writing isn't thought out more carefully, really soon, we are going to have big problems. And once again, people are going to say, oh, this didn't work again.
And Judy brings up a really, really good point there, that that's what happens. We get a new program in and then, you know, something doesn't work as quickly as we had hoped. And then it's like we're on to the next. So, Leah, last thoughts of anything that we did not cover. What I just wanted to bring up, in your book, you have some Mythbusters.
What page, Faith?
On page 88, Leah has the myth. Teachers should tell students during independent writing that spelling doesn't matter. And you then addressed that concern in your book that, no, spelling matters, but it might not be right up front to allow maybe kids to just get their thoughts down and then go back, which, of course, that to me is how I always taught. But somehow along the way, it's like we're putting spelling first and foremost when really the brain doesn't work like that. The brain really tries to get ideas together for writing. And then our last editing ideas, editing and revision, is about changing ideas and working on spelling.
But I think in the olden days, there was like such a movement with the invented spelling. We didn't go into that. And it was so invented that nobody really tried to give any feedback. So
you know what I heard? Yeah. Sonia Cabell.
Remember invented spelling? I know that's an
episode. Do you know what Sonia Cabell called it? Estimated spelling, which I like. I hear what you're saying, Judy, because I can remember thinking, like, watching a kid, that's cute. They put, you know, no vowels in their words. But if we've been working on vowels, they should be using them.
Yes.
About it.
Yeah, it's about, I think, I mean, I can only speak for myself. As my understanding has deepened, it hasn't changed my mind that kids shouldn't be writing in kindergarten and they shouldn't be estimating and doing the best that they can. But one of the learning targets we always put in the writing is at the end of this unit, all kids will accurately use what they're learning in phonics, and we put the code knowledge in there while they're writing, so that we can look at their writing against that and say, the prior month we were teaching short E and I, and this child's not using them when they're writing, so they need more practice.
So they have to be accountable for what they were taught in phonics.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, Leah, let's wrap up. Is there anything that we have not covered? Because I think, you know, I did read through your book, and I love that it definitely reflects things that I've known about the writing workshop, but it does show that, you know, your thoughts have kind of evolved with what we're seeing now with the science of reading and writing. Did we not cover anything that you would like to mention?
No, I think the only thing I'm thinking, I think because one of the things I love about your conversations is that they're so nuanced. And I feel like this conversation was really nuanced. I picked a piece of writing that I wrote for another reason. There was something happening in my town that was very nuanced. And I think I'd just like to read this because I think it's a short piece, but I just think it speaks to the importance of nuanced thinking. So I said, this was for another topic, but I said, I'm somewhere in the middle, that tricky gray area. I'm sure a lot of people are just like me, thinking it over, not wanting to get into heated conversations, but wanting to do what is best for students. In the world of education, we often speak about the dangers of binary thinking. Binary thinking is the idea that there's one right or wrong answer. It's so easy to fall into this type of thinking. Believe me, I've been guilty of this many times. Binary thinking is safe. It creates a world where things are black and white. But the problem is most things in this world are not black and white. Usually there are shades of gray. It takes bravery to lean into this uncertainty. But I believe the gray area is where the magic happens. It's the sweet spot.
I don't think I could add anything to that, Judy. Could you? I think we need to cut.
I got chills. There. Thank you.
Yeah, that was beautiful. And I think, like I said before, the tricky part of this is, you know, is it balance? Are we afraid of that word? Well, it has been co-opted. But I do think when Bruce talked about multi-component literacy instruction, that is where the future is at. I think so. So I do think, let's end it right here. Leah, you are a delight. You are as real and open as I had hoped you would be just from our conversations. Again, Leah's newest book is We Do Writing. We're going to put Leah's information in the show notes. And we would love to have these conversations again. And this was great. This was great. Judy, hit it. What do you want to tell us?
All right. Follow me on Twitter at BoxnerJudy. Follow my beautiful Faith at High Five Literacy at Faith Burkowski on Twitter. Now, we're on Instagram with our own names. I'm not going to say our own names, but we now have the new improved The Literacy View on Instagram. Yes, Faith and I are in the, is it the space age? Are we in the space age? Anyway, we're also on Facebook, Literacy View, Real Teachers Letting Loose, and you know where to find us. We're here. Thanks also to many of our viewers. You're reaching out to us personally. You're telling us what resonated with in our episodes, what you connected with, what you disagreed with. That's why we're here. We're trying to shift the needle and also have conversations with different people, different mindsets, And many people, you know, we're learning. We have a lot in common as well. We could have a wonderful conversation and celebrate where different people are in their learning journey. So thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. Good night, everyone.
Good night.